always been a unique person, you know what I mean? Sort of laid back in a way, but very adamant and very passionate about what I believe. I think a lot of times that sort of throws people off because they don't expect me to have the mindset or the process of thought that I do. And so when you come in to watch my channel, you may hear a myriad of thoughts and ideas that could be different from others. What I want you to do is just sit back, like, share, and subscribe. To receive instant notification each time I upload, please hit the subscribe button and the bell notification. Well, I like this because sometimes I get a little goofy. And yeah, as you can see, I've got us on three screen and well, that wasn't working too well. But nonetheless, I want to welcome everybody here to the Lockhart Perspective today. Well, you guys see the title and it is A Glitch in the Matrix. So the other evening we did have an illustrious guest with us and a person that, you know, I have nothing negative to say about. I think the most important piece that we can all take away from this is that these times are really, really trying. A lot of the times that we're dealing with right now, a lot of us dealing with these times in different manners, I think it just causes us to respond differently to people. I want to say hello to my brother and my sister. Hello, Black Spring, and hello, Mr. Ronnie Mann. How are both of you? I'm unmuting you guys, and are you guys? Yeah, you guys, unmute yourselves. Hello to both of you. Hello, hello.
Hello, the Lockhart Perspective.
It's good to be here at the Lockhart Perspective.
Well, you guys are outstanding. I was sitting here grooving to Ronnie Mann's theme song that he created for the show. And it pumps me up. It gets me going sometimes. My sister from the UK called Ronnie and she said, you know what? I woke up and all I could think about was that song. It was just playing in my head. And so thank you for making a very upbeat 70-ish song for me because I love the 70s. Funny thing is, Ronnie didn't even really know what from the 70s I like. I just told him I love the 70s. Well, he did not know that one of my favorite guitarists was Mr. Rogers himself, Nile, who was known for Chic and the sound of Chic. Loved it. And so I love my theme song. Never really went into depth with it like we are right now, but I love the song. We're going to go ahead and do some welcomes first. We're going to acknowledge everyone who is in the chat. We're going to start there. And then we're going to get right into the meat of exactly what happened on Saturday Night is Live this past Saturday. There were some people who were fortunate enough, and by fortunate, I mean there were some people who were actually here that evening and that saw things sort of deteriorate along with myself and others. And then there were some people who didn't get the opportunity to see it. And so I believe that this replay specifically is more so for them. And then we're going to give our blow-by-blow how can you say it, Ronnie? How would you say it, Black Spring? It's not our blow-by-blow, but it's going to be our what?
Oh, it's definitely going to be a play-by-play.
Oh, okay, play-by-play. All right, let me back up from the mic because that was funny. All right, so we're going to get right into it, saying hello all to Ronnie. And then, of course, good afternoon, Rachel Van Ziel. Thank you so very much for being such an active participant in the chat. We so appreciate you. Let's see more. She goes, "Hey, Ronnie, I appreciate your teachings. Taking it back to the Hebrew is really, really helpful. That's a blessing, you guys." Ronnie has an extensive teaching that he has in Hebrew, and he's brilliant with it. And I think that it's for such a time as this. So whenever you guys get the opportunity to listen to some of the things that he has on the channel here, please make sure you do so, because he has a lot of stuff. And then most importantly, I want you guys to go to his channel and you will hear all of the great music that he has created. So that's a good thing. Hi, everyone from Black Spring. And there's some salutations. Looks like a lot of conversations between y'all. Let me get on around y'all for a second. Y'all got a little, y'all in the middle of the vestibule at the church. Hi, how's it going? You got all four, three or four of you guys. Hello, hello. You can't get around. So Justine DeVoe says, hello, everyone. Steve Willis, God bless you. Hello and hello. Hello, One Peaches 41. What on earth is going on, girl? Again, so quickly. I feel so blessed. Yes, he does. He has many, many talents. And then good afternoon to Joanne Tripp. Rachel, again, I subscribed to his channel and I'm glad that you did. Good morning. Dog Face Pony Soldier, when I tell you I went back and read some of your stuff from the other night, it was a scream. So Ronnie, first let me start with Black Spring. Black Spring, I'm going to give you the opportunity to tell from what you saw, and then I'm going to give Ronnie the chance and then the time to share it. And then I'm going to go ahead and put on exactly what happened the other night. And when that's done, we'll come back with our commentary. So Black Spring, I'm going to go ahead and fade out here, and I'm going to give the opportunity to you to go ahead and start and tell us what you saw and then your impression, and then we'll go from there. Is that okay with you?
Yes, yes.
All righty. Here we go.
Well, what I could glean from the interview, I thought that right away that the environment was, you know, very calm, and you know, and it started out, you know, of course, that way. And I think that the Lockhart perspective, the host, was very gracious in giving Miss Stewart an opportunity to introduce herself and her prodigal daughter story. I thought she gave her a wonderful opportunity to introduce herself, and even just, but from a biographical sense, there seemed to be, you know, just a very simple question, as you know, just, you know, she just asked questions about, you know, just growing up, and of course she introduced herself as a prodigy, and of course interdisciplinary prodigy at that. It wasn't just, you know, maybe she had high aptitudes for writing beyond, you know, without a formal training per se, if you will. She mentioned that she played piano at a certain age, you know, before I presume that she was reading music without any formal training. And I mean, I have a musician's background, and there are some natural abilities that people have in the arts. You know, we might even call it perfect pitch, or we have names for those attributes. But you know, she also talked about, you know, even going away from that, you know, she continued, and to me it seemed pretty, you know, okay, you're a prodigy, but then it just the layers of pretension just kind of continued to pile on. But then when there was a simple question, something as simple as, well, how old were you when you were experiencing, or when you were exploring your prodigal, your abilities and these attributes? And, you know, immediately she went to, well, it doesn't really matter how old I was. You know, I didn't have a birth certificate like you, or maybe like others. I'm not really sure what, you know, she didn't really, to me, give a full explanation on that, but it just seems like to me, I think that we kind of took a little bit of a bump in the first small bump in the road, And then, yeah, so that's where we were on the biographical information, but even just her, even kind of a, you know, her, you know, the pedigree. She talked about how her family, you know, they were, you know, served the military in many branches and how successful they were. I mean, I don't want to misquote her, but I thought that we kind of got, you know, you got a lot of, you know, you had a flurry of attributes, but then the most basic or the most solid, just the most foundational or most fundamental questions seem to be met with some type of, you know, a bit of sand in the pearl right away. And just thinking it became more and more awkward, you know, it just became more and more awkward. And then I think even her tone, you know, changed, and it was very quick. It was a very quick turn. And it just seems like there was really no, at some point you couldn't really go back to it. And then more, you know, the Lockhart, I thought, did a fantastic job presenting the claims or, you know, the challenges, and even those that may have presented the same claims or similar claims. Or, and immediately she started to, when she was asked questions, you know, she just kind of rapid fired off. And it just, coming back from that was just, I don't want to say it was downhill from there, but I think it was kind of quickly, you know, she even talked about certain specific parts, of course, of her piece, she stated her complaint, in terms of, you know, what, you know, I guess the prequel to this, to the, you know, to the Matrix, to the film. And she likened it to, of course, her own work. So I just, you know, I think once you set something up, once you frame something in a certain way, it's kind of hard to, you know, it's just hard to come back from that. And I just think in a sense, she did kind of go downhill from there. Like, you couldn't really ask her anything. You couldn't, you know, if you followed up with her, and it was a straightforward, I think, question that the Lockhart perspective asked her about, you know, some of the discrepancies of, you know, this was her opportunity to clear up any discrepancies. Or, and I would imagine that she's given several interviews, so I would imagine that you're not new to this, but, you know, you still want to be, you know, let's just keep things in, let's keep things where we can, you know, where we can, where, let's keep things civil. We still have to be civil, even if something stings a little bit, if it's not what you want to hear. But, you know, just reciprocate, respect, and keep things on a professional level. And I think that's where she went into no man's land.
I agree. It was sort of creepy for a second there, because I was like, what just happened? And, you know, it's like when you're riding on a skateboard and you feel like you're about to lose control, but you hope you can recover it. You've been on skates or a bike or something that you got to maneuver. And that's pretty much how it felt to me. I felt like, oh, gee, I tried to ollie and I didn't and I sort of missed the curb. To Mr. Aboru's question, is the interview still available? It is available. You can find it on a couple of different platforms right now. You can find it on Library, Odyssey. I think they're partnered, but they are two different entities. It's like Library TV and then Odyssey. And then here is the master that we have here. After this, I am going to upload it. So you guys are about to see it in a few minutes here. Ronnie, do you want to talk now or do you want to talk after we show the clip? Tell us how you want to do it.
Yeah, we can show the clip.
Okay, so we're going to go directly to the clip. And we're going to start it as if it's the show. So you guys are actually going to be brought into the show and then you'll watch it up until that point. Just to give you a little bit of background, I was waiting for her to come in to the actual backstage. And during the time of waiting for her to come backstage, the time was really clicking. And so I had a lot of folks waiting. So I just decided, you know what, bring her on in as we try to maneuver this. So, you know, I'd like to have a little welcoming thing. Feels like the whole family's here. And so what you're going to see at first is you're going to see us trying to help her maneuver her way in through with the stream. And then after that, we're going to cut to the show. We'll do the beginning of the show, and then we'll go and we'll segue right into seeing her so that you know exactly what we're looking at. Okay. So here we are.
Yeah, but it doesn't go in. Well, I don't know. I'm just going to see.
Okay. Well, we're waiting for you. We're here. The show has already started, huh?
I'm putting it in right now.
All righty.
Picture, that's the only thing.
It's okay. You don't need a picture. You can just come on and show us your beautiful face. You're actually live right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to allow you to enlist the help of a relative because somebody had to teach me how to use it. And enlist the help of a relative because somebody literally had to teach me how to use it as well. And that way you ought to be pretty good to go.
What happens because I'm messing with it now.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you in a few minutes. As soon as you, the best thing to do with StreamYard is to go directly on your computer, plop in that link.
Right here, I can see you.
Yeah, you can see me. You can see me. Okay, I see you, and it says that you're disconnected.
To get this camera thing to work.
Okay.
And it's not doing it. You know how you say, undo?
Yeah.
It's not doing it.
It'll be, it's going to be okay. Just watch. It's going to work. Just watch. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank each and every one of you for being here. As you can see, we're both trying to get everything together. I'm so glad to be in good company because I will tell you right now, that oftentimes I don't even know how to use most of this stuff. I am learning every single day. So we're going to go ahead and get right into the show here in just a second. And we will see you guys back here in just a moment. I've always been a unique person. You know what I mean? Sort of laid back in a way, but
upload, please hit the subscribe button and the bell notification.
Technology and I are not friends by any stretch of the imagination. I believe that it is Beelzebub. So with that said, I'm excited because she is now here and we are going to get right into it. As you all know, there has been a lot of scuttlebutt about the Matrix and there have been so many different stories. I thought it'd be best to just get her here and let's just all talk about it. Let's get some ground things established. We'll definitely talk to her about her formal years. We'll talk to her about the time that she spent as she is a writer. And we'll also pinpoint a couple of the things that we have heard and dispel a lot of those myths. And we'll possibly learn some new information about her this evening. Her name is Sophia Stewart. She is a New York native. And so I'm excited. So let's just get right into it. She's here with us right now. I'm going to go ahead and add her into the stream with us and let her come on and chat. Hello, how are you? We are so happy to have you. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Finally, it started working, like you said.
Yes, so happy to see that. Great. Thank you so very much. Can you hear me? Because I can just barely hear you.
Oh, I can hear you excellently, and I'm surprised that you can barely hear me because my
it's, you're
mic
sort
is
of you're sort of distant. It's almost like you're distant, or maybe get a little closer. Get a little closer. Remember that old Arid Extra Dry commercial? Here I'm dating myself. Yeah.
Is that much
okay.
Better?
So, not really. You may want to come up just a little closer to your microphone or are you alone? Can you remove your mask? If you're alone, can you remove it so we can hear you just a little bit better?
I cannot remove the mask. We're in a public place, and we
okay. No worries at all. We totally get it. We want you and everyone else there to be safe. So we're going to get right into it. You know, there's been a lot that's been said with regards to the Matrix, with regards to the Terminator, and a lot of those things have caused a lot of confusion. You mentioned something to me the other day as it relates to confusion, and you said, you know what? It's not of God. And I agree with you 110%. And I also believe that the best way to get down to the bottom of something is just go directly to the source. And if you don't have both or three, all three sources, it's best to just cut down to the chase. So what can you tell me about your early years? Everybody wants to know where somebody great begins. Tell us about your formal years, your young years, your years as a young girl. I want to hear all about your opportunity to graduate junior high school and go right into college. As I read in your bio, I was absolutely stoked about that. Tell us about you. Tell us who you are.
Well, for one thing, I'm a master writer, and I started writing early in the seventh grade when I was 11 years old. I'm a prodigy because I won the case, my court case that people have been maligning and lying about on the internet for years and calling me an urban legend and a myth. And I'm not a myth. I'm not an urban legend. I really beat several law firms. One law firm had over 100 attorneys. I am a master writer because, and a screenwriter, a author of several books, a producer, an entrepreneur. Been one
very good.
I was a kid.
That's excellent. Yeah. Do you have any siblings? Are you the only child? Are you the only product, the only brilliant child in the household? Or are you like a lot of families where you have one or two kids? Do you have any siblings? Tell us about that.
I have brothers on both my mother's side and my father's side. My family are military and law enforcement.
Okay.
So they're brilliant in those careers, but I'm the one that chose to do something different.
Okay. Now, when you were little, did you have an affinity towards books, towards reading? What were you like as a child?
I was reading and writing prolifically at 3 years old.
Wow.
My seventh grade, my first teacher to teach me writing was a college professor at the university. What happened was my teacher in grade school got sick. And so the substitute teacher came in and he said he didn't know anything about English because she was our English teacher. But he said he knew about writing and that he would teach us to write. So I've been writing for a long time. So by the time I got into college, I did not do high school. I took the New York Regents, went into college and got a degree. But
now,
I had some very...
Tell us about that, because I saw that and I know everybody else that we shared your bio with is absolutely amazed. Tell us, how do you go, a young girl in New York, from junior high school to passing that test? Tell us about that. I want to know that. Tell us about that.
What can I tell you? They give you an exam. They call the New York Regents, and anybody that can pass it can get their high school diploma and go into any college.
How old were you
difficult.
At the time?
It doesn't matter how old I am or was, because I don't have a birth certificate like you guys have a birth certificate. My mother is native and Portuguese, and native people did not go to hospitals. They had their babies at home. So three of us was at home.
Okay.
So we did not have my brother and my sister and brother, my older brother and sisters. So we didn't have birth certificates. We were never registered. I'm never registered.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So me being very smart, I won the presidential award while I was in grade school at junior high. I was very athletic, loved sports, played tennis with the boys in college, USC, City University of New York. I kind of was like my father. I was gifted in music and musician. I could play the piano by ear before I even had any musical notes or music. I was already playing the piano prolifically. Just a gift. A prodigy is an enigma, a person that can crack the codes on things and do things that are extraordinary things that most geniuses or other people cannot do.
Absolutely. Like, and that's exceptional. You mentioned USC. Those are my old stomping grounds, being that I was raised in California. You know, USC was somebody I used to go to USC and hang out with everybody there. And I used to also go out to UCLA and have a good time. You found the opportunity to write your first that we know of as far as which one is popular. And that was The Third Eye. And you did that while attending USC, correct?
That's correct. I wrote in 1980, I wrote The Third Eye Matrix and Terminator book. It is The Third Eye Matrix and Terminator because the third eye is the eye of God, because on earth we have two eyes, we people. And I'm talking about the womb that God's children come from, which is called the Matrix, a 7,000-year-old Latin word. And I'm talking about Terminator end time revelations, because in Revelations, the prophecy says that the Christ conscious would come back again upon the earth. And I wrote the story, a futuristic science fiction story, never seen on any screen, never been heard of ever, about the second coming of the Christ, the evolutions of consciousness, man versus the machine.
Mm-hmm. And you did that story. And that is the one that is, ladies and gentlemen, The Third Eye Matrix that she wrote. In tandem with that, I do know that there is a lot of discussion as it relates to the Terminator, as it relates to the Matrix. How was it that they utilized? Now, in 1980, you were, what year in college were you in 80?
In 1980, I was a graduate. I'd already graduated from college in 1980 at USC. I was in grad school at SC, studying in FEMS. Went to school with Marcus Allen, Ronnie Lott, August Curley, James Sinclair, Dennis Johnson, and the Moore brothers. And Charles White was on his way out, the Heisman winner. On his way out, when I came in, he was a senior, getting ready to graduate. But I met him through Marcus and Ronnie.
Very good.
Later on, I went.
You were some heavyweights. You guys are all heavyweights out there at USC. A lot of my friends, several of my friends that graduated with us went to USC, and a lot of them, you know, flourished and did quite well. So that is good to know. I do want to talk to you a little bit, and you and I talked before the show. You guys, I had the opportunity to speak with Sophia, and when I tell you, just a down-to-earth person and a person who's very, you know, open and transparent, she even told me, listen, you can even be adversarial if you need to. And as you guys here in the chat know, I will go to a specific level of asking questions that may not be something that you always are used to, but it does get us all on one page. When you were writing this and you decided... Let me just take a step back. Not when you wrote it. When you finally realized that your work had been plagiarized, or that your work had been taken or used, however you want to say it. Where were you? What year was that? Tell us about that.
Well, when I found out that my work was adapted from my script and book to the screen was actually March the 31st, 1999, when I went and saw The Matrix with one of my friends. I went to the movies and I saw my work on the screen. I hadn't sold it to anybody. It was copyrighted. My copyrights are 81, 83, and 84. I didn't know about the Terminator until the FBI told me, because like I told you, I come from a military law enforcement family. In other words, my family members are FBI agents, marshals, policemen, correction officers, and the other part of military, you know, Navy, Air, Army, so forth. So mm-hmm. I've been lived on a lot of bases. I used to work for the government. While I was a teenager, I worked twice for the federal government. So I know government and everything. So at the time when I didn't know anything about the Terminator, I went to law enforcement when I saw my work on the screen. Warner Brothers them offered me money trying to buy my copyrights, which are worth billions of dollars. They was trying to buy them for $5 million. Even Schwarzenegger called me up and offered me $5 million for the Terminator copyright. And I refused because, like I told you, I was doing taxes, grown people, H&R Block for taxes for grown people when I was 11 years old. So I knew about money. I knew about accounting. I knew how to do 1099 OIDs, and some of the IRS agents don't know how to do that. I scored a 98 on the IRS exam. It's pure math, 2 points from 100. So I was well versed in math, and as you can know, matrix and terminator is futuristic. In 1980, while I'm at USC, I'm talking about the Federal Reserve, the Trilateral Commissions, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers. I'm talking about programming and downloading when Trinity tells Tank to download her so she can fly the helicopter. I'm talking about body scanners, food scanners, alien technology in 1980.
Okay, so let me ask you specifically, laser specific. I want to know your correlation with the Terminator. How do we determine that the Terminator is something that is yours? At what point do we recognize that?
It's easy. It's in the book. It's the epic story I wrote.
Right.
It was 20 pages. Wait a minute. So much work in there. I did the special effects, the graphics, the characters, the concept. A movie is only a fraction out of a book. A movie is only 1 hour and 36 minutes, and it's just filming. It's not writing, it's filming. It may be 2 hours and 20 minutes or 10 minutes. So they adapted it to the screen like they did Lords of the Rings, well, J.R.R. Tolkien's book, the Hobbit, just like they did John Grisham, The Pelican Brief, The Firm. Anytime you adapt any book, copyrighted work, it is the author's work that you're putting on the screen and not the filmmaker's work. It's the same
right.
thing that the architect does. I want
right.
the people to know.
Right. The so I don't mean to cut you off, but here's what I'm really trying to get down to the nuts and the bolts of it, because you and I only have an hour to share together, and I really want it to be as substantive as possible. So with that, go ahead.
Let me, the Terminator is the prequels to the Matrix. It's the beginning of the epic story. The machines in the future, here's the prophecy that a baby is going to be born that's going to destroy them when they enslave mankind. They know that they have to time travel to the past to kill Sarah Connor. They know her name. So they time travel wrapped in flesh, kill but cannot be killed, Terminators coming to kill her. And Kyle Reese, he hears the same Oracle prophecy. And he's going to the past to save her. And he
Listen, I have to stop you. I have to stop you. And the reason why I have to stop you is because a lot of us are lovers of the Terminator and lovers of, you know, the work, The Matrix. We love it. So we know the story. What I would try to find out is, first of all, we know that there is a couple of people who have the claim to the Terminator, as an example. And one of those individuals was Mr. Ellison. And so Ellison did sue, and
yes, but
he actually filed a claim, and he didn't have to go to court, but they did pay
him. He did not sue.
Right. They never went to court, but they settled.
They stole elements from him, $88,000 worth.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
So here's something that I want to step away for, folks. We're going to just show something right quick. It's just a really quick, caption. I want everybody to be able to watch it and to see it together. We're going to watch it together, and it's just to answer, share with us exactly what you think once she and I are done here, documentary as it were, and we're going to answer just a couple of questions here. So let me pull this up for you guys. About it. So I'm going to defer to my fingertips that are now moving me and me trying to take some time to speak. Here we go. All right, there we are. Okay, here we go.
Terminator 1984 acknowledgments to the works of Harlan Ellison. Harlan was an American science fiction writer who wrote many stories that started in a post-apocalyptic version of our world, predating the Terminator 1984, with moral lessons about where humanity is heading. His writings were also quite visceral, as he didn't believe in toning down violence. He's quoted as saying, "Violence is painful. It's full of blood. It hurts people. It kills people. And I think when you lie about it, when you pretty it up, you lead people to believe that it's possible to go around shooting each other, punching each other, and stabbing each other with impunity. And my stories are intended to have a very pronounced emotional effect on people. And so on occasion, in a story, when it demands that, yes, I get very candid. very realistic, end quote. James Cameron has had numerous lawsuits and claims put against him for plagiarism throughout his career, but Harlan Ellison was the only one of the people to win out of court settlements or agreements, not lawsuits. This certainly, on the surface, looks like an admittance of guilt of some sort, surely. Now, the Terminator's plagiarism claims were only ever really told from Harlan Ellison's perspective. He himself stated that this was stipulated by the settlement deal that James Cameron and other parties connected to the Terminator would not be able to comment or talk about what happened. And it was often referred to by Cameron as a, quote, bum deal. Harlan states that he received a lump sum of money with another additional amount to be paid later, and that all future publications of The Terminator on home release and broadcasts on TV would feature acknowledgments to the works of Harlan Ellison. Harlan Ellison also claimed that if James Cameron had approached him and said that he wanted to do his own take on Harlan's ideas, that Harlan would have allowed Cameron to do it for free had he just thanked him in the end credits. The way Ellison tells it, he began hearing rumblings during the production of The Terminator that it was sounding a bit like his Outer Limits episode, Soldier, which Ellison had adapted from his 1957 story, Soldier from Tomorrow. Ellison claims that his requests to read the script were denied and that he had not been invited to the critics' screenings. When he managed to sneak into one of the screenings, he felt that the first few minutes of The Terminator were identical to Soldier. If true, another aspect of Ellison's claim is more compelling. He says that he was contacted by a friend at Starlog who said that the magazine was receiving pressure from Cameron's representatives to excise a quote from an interview Cameron gave Starlog. According to Ellison, in the original transcript of the interview, Cameron said that he got the idea for Terminator from a handful of Outer Limits episodes. Ellison also claimed that another acquaintance reported to him that he'd heard Cameron boast that he'd quote, ripped off a couple of Harlan Ellison's stories, end quote, in the writing of The Terminator. Many people have noted that in addition to Soldier, Demon with a Glass Hand, another one of Ellison's Outer Limit episodes, bears certain similarities to The Terminator. The results? Well, it doesn't appear that Ellison ever filed a complaint. He said that the studio was eager to settle the case out of court, and he puts the monetary settlement in the vicinity of $65,000, and now the Terminator credits include and acknowledge Ellison. This is Felicia Lockhart, and this has been the Lockhart Perspective.
Now, that was after doing a great deal of research that I had to do, and I, of course, pulled all of it together. And all of the parts of everything that I have used is will be down below in the description box. But with all that said, that is one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about simply because of the fact that this gentleman's work is all the way back to, you know, 1957. And the judge in that situation, when they all decided how much he was going to get, they agreed that they would pay him something as well. They would give him his rights. And this was not posthumously, this was while he was still alive, that they would put it in all of the broadcasts as well as the movies. So with that said, the one thing that I wanted to ask you was, when you consider everybody is able to get this kind of information, how do you reckon with your claim to this actual piece of work, which would be The Terminator?
My claim is validated through the courts. There was no judge validations of Harlan Ellison. They settled out with him because they stole teleplay. Teleplay is background. The story came from me.
That's not true.
Because you never read the book. You never saw the teleplay on my story. Okay. And it's been validated by two federal judges.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, and everybody in the chat hears what you're saying, and I totally get it. I totally understand what you're saying.
It has been validated by two federal judges, and I sell Terminator around the world. So you can kiss my ass. How's that?
Oh, I appreciate kissing of the asses, but I don't want to kiss yours.
Well, you can.
My goal is to, however, get to the bottom of what it is that we're going to talk about today. You and I both decided that we would talk about it in a very respectful manner. I would respect you. You would respect me. But these are just the hard questions. Oh, guys, it looks like we've lost her. I'm so terribly sorry that only 30 minutes into the audio and everything, we had to lose her. However, there is some other information that we do need to take a look at. Now, in as much as she stated that the Terminator was hers, I get it. You know what I mean? I totally get it. We can all come together and decide, listen, I have this mindset of a hero. Everybody has a...
All right. So I know One Peach is 41. Yeah. I'm just going to bring you in, Ronnie. And I don't know. I'm going to bring you back in, Ronnie. And I don't know exactly. I'm going to let you go from there. And then I guess I'll sort of recap everything. And so here's basically where we were. The gentleman by the name of Harlan Ellison, you see the video that I had created and presented to her. Harlan Ellison wrote two major stories in 1957. And actually, I digress. In 1957, he wrote one piece, and then shortly after that, he wrote another. But these things were all visual, and they were on the Outer Limits. When you juxtapose his work to the very beginning of the Terminator, and his work, you can still find it, excuse me, you will see a stark, I mean, the similarity is uncanny. It's almost step by step, and it's his work. Clearly, it's his work. Now, for some clarification, the part of the story that I was doing was I was literally breaking down the story frame by frame, as well I was attempting to show some relevance based on what she said, right? Because the first thing she says, there's two accounts. The first thing is the Terminator is hers, and the second thing is the Matrix was hers. So I was actually going through process of elimination. I was dealing with, in my impression, I was dealing with what I thought was important, and that is, let's get out all of the, let's dispel all the myths. So what you do in that case is you throw it all on the table, and then you begin to exegete what is and what is not, right? That's my impression. You put it all out here, all right? Good, bad, ugly, whatever people can find out, you put it on the table, and then let's unpack it, right? Let's unpack it. Let's talk about it. Let's put everything into quote unquote perspective. Well, I think I don't know what happened, because she didn't even get a chance to see the rest of the things that I had there, not necessarily refuting her, because here's the deal. If you've got truth, it is what it is. Truth stands alone. It doesn't need any assistance. It doesn't need any help. I know the old adage that if you tell a lie long enough, it can become the truth. But all I was doing was bringing what is public record, things that you can find. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they decided to give him money. No, listen, I've watched a lot of Harlan's interviews since doing her story. I had to do a lot of digging, and everything that I dug up on this man, this guy was old school. He was all about the money. So his mindset was, no, forget all that going to court stuff. Just give me my due. Give me my money. You know, he tells the story, Harlan Ellison, the one who was attributed to the Terminator. He tells a story about how homeless he was and how he was living in a hotel at one point, you know, paying a few dollars a week, and that everything he had to do, he would budget. He would sell his little stories and budget for the weekly rent that he had to pay at a hotel room. So this guy was old school. His thinking and his thought process was, no, I don't want to go to court. you know, I'll threaten you with court, but I don't want to go to court. Because, you know, if we go to court, you guys are going to lose. So just give me my money and then put my name on the work, because clearly you have taken my work. So they did settle out of court. There are two stories. The first story is the story that I'm going to go by, and that's the one that came out of his mouth. And that is, he said that he got $65,000, and then his name was added onto the credits for the Terminator for both the sale as well as any television replays. So everything that you see now should have his name on it, right? So that is and that was 1957. This gentleman, Cameron, was alleged to have they heard that he was saying that he swiped it, that he took it from him, and that he used it. Okay. And then the gentleman that we're talking about, the guy who wrote the stuff, Ellison says that, hey, they wouldn't let me come to the screenplay. They wouldn't let me come to the screenings. They wouldn't let me come read the script. So I snuck into a preview. And when I snuck into that preview, it was exactly like watching my work from the beginning. Okay. So what I'm asking her is, how do you reckon with that? Because I know that this is a new situation to me, but it isn't new to her. So I'm trying to get her feedback and understanding as to how she has reckoned with this fact. And clearly she knew about this gentleman. My question is an honest question. Ronnie, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And exactly what you're saying. And to your point, the progression of conversation was, you know, standard. It was standard journalism. So, you know, if I come on your platform and there's controversy to whatever storyline that or, you know, rhetoric that I have taken up, then, you know, this is my chance to speak to a certain audience, a certain demographic, and, you know, state my case and make my case plain. It didn't quite go down that way, you know, for whatever reasons or what have you. But, you know, just to reiterate, it was extremely standard, you know, a rebuttal. I make a statement and then you come back with something that is, mind you, public information and easily obtainable. And, you know, you had a duty to do, and her obligation was to either counter or, you know, continue on. But definitely it did go south. An interesting afterthought. I was talking to my wife about the whole circumstance, and she was saying, we might be feeding into some of what, you know, some of her gameplay, which is just continuing to feed life into the things that she has going on. And, you know, her name is in our mouths right now. We're having a whole segment on her. So, you know, I would like to speak on this just for the sake of.
Exactly.
Of how it went down, and definitely
that.
Right. Make some content and then, you know, speak on it just to smooth out the surface. We owe the listening audience a certain amount, being that they put in time to see, you know, to see what's going on. So, but after that, yeah, definitely we need to just, you know, toss this to the left.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that Black Spring had a few, you know, a couple of opinions about it as well as it relates to being done with it. And I'm done with it. My main concern was for the listener who was like, wait a minute, we had Saturday Night Live, like you said, Ronnie, you know, for them, here is what happened. And I think that unless we really go out and Google her name, we really won't get the fullness or the full context of why it was important for me to bring this piece. And because I took it all down, I took everything off of my YouTube channel. And where you're seeing this from is actually from my archive that Ronnie was able to edit the end of, because what we did at the end, which we still have, the physical one is up elsewhere, but we had Ghost, what's the name of it? Ghost Shipper, Ghost something.
The Ghost in the Ship.
Ghost in the Shell. And so the reason why we had Ghost in the Shell there was because we were showing a couple of other contrasts of individuals who could easily sue, or who the folks who that they could have sued the writers or the alleged, you know, producers, or however that whole thing is, of The Matrix, because it was long before The Matrix was made. And in that he had to clip to take them out of it, it looked exactly like some of The Matrix. And so I was going to ask her, okay, so we've got these individuals who could easily sue them. I think it was an Orion film, and I could be wrong about that. But my question is, how do we reckon the fact that there are other individuals that have, you know, the same type of claim and the same type of background and the same type of theme throughout their shows? Listen, the motif for a lot of shows is always the one guy who is the hero. You know what I mean, you guys? It's like everybody has the hero. Everybody was trying to get to Oz to see the wizard. They all wanted to get to him because he could help save them. Everybody seems to want to be saved. And so my point is that if we look at any story that has that type of theme, it could easily be, you know, stated that it's similar to that. Now, one thing I did say, and I said it here in the follow-up on the video, was that, and I'm going to close this out unless you guys want to see the rest of it, but what I was basically saying is, on her own, she's a really good writer. And it doesn't make any sense to, you know, to talk bad about a person or anything like that. It's very important to lift that person up. If you know the truth is that she can write. If it were me, I probably would have just focused on my writing ability because, again, she's good. So I wanted to come in today and I wanted to just, you know, talk to everybody about it. I'm going to take it off the screen now. But I wanted to talk, you know, to all of us about it and, you know, see what all we had to say, but I really wanted to let you guys see it to get you guys involved. Now, let me tell you guys what time it is. The time that it is right now is for, amen, Sherry P. The time that it is right now is all things are being revealed. I'm going to say that again. The season that we're in right now is that all things are being revealed. And that it doesn't matter where or who or how, you know, if there's some stuff that you got to deal with, it's all going to get revealed. If there's some stuff that needs to be, you know, spoken of, or some things that maybe you haven't been honest about, and it's to this degree where it's so public and it's so constant, things will be revealed. I don't understand why we couldn't just talk about that topic, but for whatever reason, it made her feel uncomfortable straight up. Okay. So nonetheless, let's go on ahead and close it out, Ronnie and Miss Black Spring. I know I don't want it to be so dull and so sad, you guys. Where's your jokes? Give me some.
I did want to make a comment, if several comments actually. Please. Commentary on the commentary, but if Black Spring, well, Otto didn't have anything to say pertinent at the moment.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be very brief with, I mean, I just think that, you know, that demeanor, and once it goes left or once it goes downhill, it's just hard for me to reset. I mean, I was actually, you know, hoping that she was going to like kind of calm down, or I was just thinking, well, you've been given the space to refocus, or you know, just, you know, to see where we're trying to go. Where it's not, I want to say that the Lockhart perspective, Felicia, you were not attacking her. It was not an attack. It was not presented. It wasn't framed that way. But I think it was, just in her nature to be highly reactive. And I think if anyone gave her any pushback, I think she was going to receive, they were going to receive something similar, if not worse, even though that was very inappropriate. And I think you gave her more than grace in that time. So I yield the balance of my time.
Okay. I had a couple things to say. One, briefly, let's take this as constructive criticism, just real quick. Everybody in the chat, we just heard the banter. We just heard how it played out. I want to ask the chat specifically, you know, for feedback. Was that standard journalism, the banter? Was that did the Lockhart perspective do standard journalism, or did she come off antagonistically? So one, standard journalism. Two, put that in the chat. Two, she was an antagonist. And we'll use whatever feedback that we get as constructive criticism. If you ask me, that was standard journalism.
Well, I really do want to make sure that, you know, like I said, I believe that the woman has an exceptional talent to write. And for me, I enjoyed her work. I really did. I read the Third Eye, and I also read The Matrix 4, which is a book that she wrote in 2010, you guys. She wrote it, and mind you, all of her stuff is written in a screenplay type, so it's like screen ready. Her stuff is really, really good. And so it wasn't a matter of trying to, you know, put her on the spot, but these are questions that if you're going to have such a heavy claim, these are the types of things that you have to be willing to talk about. And for me to have found all of that Harlan Ellison information, which she was very well versed on as well, to me, it seems that those are things that you need to be able to refute or to substantiate or whatnot. It was a plain and simple case. It was, he went, he said, this is my work. Here is my proof. Here is the evidence was that it was on television. The Outer Limits was well known back in the day. And here you go. Here's what I did. And here's the story, the two stories that I wrote, the one with the hand and then the other one from the soldier from the future. Those two stories are the ones that they used, and Cameron allegedly admitted it. And here it is. It's plain and simple. It's not convoluted. It's, you don't add, you know, water and stir. No, it is what it is. So when you ask the question and this is the response, I don't understand it. And so for me, I would just have to say that on her own, she's an exceptional writer. And on her own, I feel as if she could have just stood on her own and been a contender in the world of writing and stories. And I mean, look at it. The last several years, this poor soul has been fighting against people who most assuredly could have stolen from her. Okay. The Matrix could have been stolen from her. Because I am not God, I do not know. But what I do know is what a contender for the Black community that she could have been as it relates to putting out shows that are science fiction in nature. She could have been a foe and a formidable foe at that when you consider all of the other stuff that we've had to look at from the Black perspective on the screen. We have been everything from murderers and shooters and killers and rapists and pimps and prostitutes and, you know, big mouth, loud mouth, this, everything you could think of. But to have somebody with this type of ability to focus and hone in on the great talent that Sophia has, we would have been able to have great pivotal movies. And yes, I do understand that there is still that dark cloud over the Matrix. I get that. But I'm talking about her ability as a writer. I want to take all the other stuff off the table and just be fair and just be equitable. This woman, again, can write. She is good at what she does. Okay? And yes, I know what we saw that day. I'm just saying that when you are out of pocket and when you are not in your rightful place, you throw everything around you off. I say this before, I've said it before. In the church, they used to say, well, if you're a singer, stay in the choir. And if you're supposed to be with the babies and, you know, stay in the nursery and you're not a singer, please don't get up here singing because that's not your gifting. You throw the whole balance off. The whole ecosystem gets thrown off. You know what I'm saying? And I can only imagine how angry. Here's Anarchy Television. I understand the feeling of knowing that your work has been plagiarized. And now is making somebody else money. It is infuriating. Here's the point. She said at the very beginning that they offered her $5 to $7 million. Sometimes you got to understand, hey, let's play this game. Harlan Ellison took $65,000 for the Terminator. $65,000? But what was his goal? I'm going to have this money that I'm getting right now. I'm going to get this money and I'm going to live off this money. This money ain't going to go in the grave with me. Let me go head on and break even. Let me go head on and get my money. And let me make sure y'all put my name out there. You done stole it. Clear as day, you done stole it. Now let me go ahead and get my Skrilla. Let me get my money on. And that's exactly what he did, because he understood, hey, look, this is a problem. You guys took it. I know that you have the ability to keep us locked up in court for several years. I know that you've got the ability to go and hide stuff and lie on me and turn my name around. And I'm going to say something. When you have to, like Sophia, run behind the eight ball for several years and try to tell everybody your truth, it could very well be true. But if you're dealing with a bunch of cats who got a whole bunch of money, if you're dealing with a bunch of cats who know the who knows, take that money. I know it may seem unethical for me to say it, but here's my point. Go ahead and take that $5 to $7 million. I need to demand that you put my name on the end of everything the same way that Harlan Ellison did with you. I think that was in the future, right? But nonetheless, I need you to come on and give me my credit. Give me that $5 to $7 million. And then I need you to make sure that I have the right to get any awards y'all get. I need to make sure I need the right to do that. All right? Because as you guys go up, I can go up with you. Do you feel what I'm saying? I can go up with you. What do you say, Ronnie?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I don't know. The world has the terminology or the phraseology, pick your battles or what have you. But that is a wise route, especially when you're dealing with people whose money is long. I mean, their money is way longer than anything that I can put on the table. So. Yeah, I would have to agree with that. This is the thing that I take away from it. Because, you know, every experience, we should definitely be grabbing info that we can learn from and grow from. So I'm sure there's many aspects, but this is one aspect that I got out from it. I know here at the Lockhart Perspective that you try to uplift people. You try to you stay positive, even in the face of adversity. You remained, you know, somebody said a consummate professional, and you clearly did that. It's just who you are, and these are the things that I want to bring to the table. I'm not speaking poorly upon anybody. I'm only using your own words to convey. I mean, I'm using the very things that you said out of your own mouth. The individual used to describe herself, you know, things like master writer, prodigy, used prodigy couple of times. You know, she a genius, prolific, you know, these huge words to uplift herself. And then, meanwhile, you stay and remain humble. So right there, that lets you know that there is some type of, there's two different spirits. Like, okay, of course, there's two different people that are speaking and having a conversation. But behind that, there's two different spirits that were confronting each other, and they did not mesh well. So that lets you know right there, you know, what type of person that we're dealing with, because here at the Lockhart Perspective, we've already vetted your personality. We've already vetted your heart. So we know where you stand. So there was an adversarial spiritual confrontation there, if I may say. And but on the, you know, that's the spiritual level. But on the surface level, what we can get out of it is we may very well find ourselves in this very predicament.
How so?
I might, you know, come up with something, just for the word of the day, prolific. I might come up with something, something prolific. And, you know, I didn't go copyrighted, or maybe I did.
Black screen, get your boy.
maybe I did copy. Maybe it's copywritten. Maybe it's not, what have you. But somebody stole my work and they skyrocketed, you know, got got vast, just came up off of it. And I'm over here, you know, behind the scenes, you know, feeling frustrated, angry, and there's nothing I can do about it. And then I get a platform where somebody gets me, where I can come on and get interviewed and then plead my case and then, you know, make my case in front of the general public. We are our own PR. We're our own public relations mm-hmm. at all times. Mm-hmm. I need to present. If I want to get to where that work that I did mm-hmm. that was stolen mm-hmm. could have taken me,
yeah,
then there has to be more in me that I can exude at the proper time, you know, in season, out of season, to be able to deliver that to the general public. So I can, you know, okay, yeah, that work got stolen, but here's me and here's what I can bring to the table and paint myself in a positive light to the general public, to where people, I mean, even on an empathy level, you know, some type of level, like, oh yeah, I feel him. We need to give him another chance or what have you. Like, he's such a guy or something. But instead, like, oh yeah, he shows out every chance he gets, whatever, you know? And so I think there's a lesson to be learned. We are our own publicists. We need to save face. We need to present ourselves in the best positive light all times.
Agreed.
Answer calls.
Agreed. I agree with you 110%. And then I think everybody, we did share that night. So I have to conclude this piece because I got to add it all together. I received shortly after her getting offline, I received a litany of text messages that I did not respond to all the way up until, believe it or not, the 24th was yesterday. Is that correct? Yeah, 24th. She sent me the final message was yesterday on the 24th. So from that time that she got off, she sent me a lot of stuff that just, it was just very, very mean-spirited things. She equated me to RuPaul. She said that I'm looking at the text messages, so it's in print. My law professor used to say, if you do not want somebody to know something, he said, do not put it in print. He said, do not put it in print. And here in print, I see she equates me to RuPaul. She goes on to discuss my husband. She says, RuPaul may look better than your blank. Tell your Jewish a husband. You both are black. Like Kamala, just a bevy of stuff. So I had to be fair and I have to tell you, okay? I have to say what happened. And here's why. Because it happened to me. And as a youngster, what I learned as an adult, looking back at the things that happened to me when I was coming up, I told you guys that I stopped giving a pass to abusers. And here's what it is. When I was abused as a child, I could not say anything. And over time, my silence to me as an adult, when I look back at it, was a semi-quasi type of compliance agreement. So what I learned as an adult is I said no. And as you can see on the channel, I go all the way back here. You can go all the way back and you'll see on the channel that I exposed my uncle, one of them, that had done what he had done to me. Because you guys saw the first few videos started out with what had happened. And then about a few years later, we found him. And there it is. You see it. So in this case, no, I will not hide any abuse that you do. If you abuse somebody, whether it be me or whether it be anybody else, especially in this case, I am going to expose what you've done, especially if it's tangible and it's something that is evidence. It came from you. You did it. And you exercised this sense of, some type of mindset of supremacy in some way against me. No, I'm going to tell. That I will tell. I will defend anybody. But when you become abusive and when you begin to talk about transgender, when you begin to talk about, you know, Jewish people, when you begin to call me the N-word as you did here, I will not hold your secrets, and I will bring you up. Why? Because I have family members who are, gay. I do. I am a Black woman. But when it comes down to you throwing names around and throwing ethnicities and throwing all of the things that all of us as a whole have stood in some fashion or another to protect, and then you use these types of words and terms against someone who followed your directive to get you to be a guest on the channel, I don't think that's very nice. I just don't think it's very nice, and I will not cover up for you. Now, shame, shame. You guys, I want to thank you so much for spending the last hour and about 11 and 12 minutes with me. You guys are awesome. I so appreciate you. Before we go, I want to give a moment to Miss Black Spring with Autumn. If you got anything to say, it doesn't have to be about this topic, just anything, something you've got coming up, something you may want people to tune into. Go right ahead, madam. The time is all yours. Or right. Ronnie, you can I'm do on, it. You may have stepped away.
I'm on mute.
Oh, you were on mute. Bless your soul. Go.
Sorry about that. But yes, I just want to thank you for having me on, and thank you for all of your hard work that you put into that interview. And the only thing I'll add is that I am working on a second platform, a second home base, I guess, for Black Spring with Autumn. So, you know, if you're around, or you know, you might check it out and see what comes up. So that's what I'm working on. And then of course I'll probably do a stream on tomorrow. Yeah.
I was trying to respond to Peaches. You're right, Peaches, and I won't anymore. You guys, after this, we're done with this topic. I don't even know if I'm going to allow this live to stay up, to be candid with you, but I felt that you guys deserve to know exactly what happened, and then we can squash it, because we got some good stuff going on at the end of this week, and I'm done with it. You feel me? After this, I'm finished, because the way that we deal with this will dictate how we stay and what's going to happen at the latter part of this week and what's going to happen next week. Some of the outstanding guests that we have, we're going to take the focus from here and move it to the positive. We're going to take it and drag it right into the light. Ronnie, what do you got going on where you want to share with us right quick, where we can find you and what you've got going on before we close out?
Oh yeah. I don't have that rhetoric ready offhand, but I'll tell you this, when it's all said and done, you can find me in the kingdom. I'll tell you that. But I will say this. I said this to Black Spring with Autumn yesterday, I think. My days are all meshed together. But it definitely applies to you. I guess I'm just giving some shout outs real quick. You might feel underappreciated or what have you, but the things that you are doing is affecting lives that spans miles, not just in the vicinity of where you are, but, you know, through technology, you're hitting people coast to coast, you're hitting people in other countries, and you are definitely giving them food for thought. And in turn, everything is positive that you are, you know, feeding the quote unquote masses. So it can only be good, and you should only feel like you should pop your collar a little bit for that. And so I want to give a shout out to Black Spring with Autumn. Want to give a shout out to the Lockhart Perspective. Want to give a shout out to Steve Willis. He's awesome. Want to give a shout out to everybody, you know, who is high five worthy. And everybody
the whole
else.
Chat is high five worthy. We got the best chat on the planet. Oh, yes, he's right.
Thank you, Ronnie, man. Thank you.
I appreciate both of you guys. You guys are my, you need good people in your life to keep you grounded, and you need good people in your life to tell you, nope, that's not a good idea. No, stop that. Come back. You know what? Or, hey, that's a great idea. And so that's the reason why I thank the Most High for these two individuals, as well as everybody in the chat, because here's why I say that this is the most interactive chat you could have. I not only see you guys here, but I can also go to the email, and there you are, giving information, sharing information, you know, all kinds of different things. So that's why I say we are co-laborers. We're not, you know, no followers or any. We're co-laborers in this thing. Anyway, you guys, this Wednesday, Can you say Cynthia McKinney? If you can say that, then you need to see us here at 11 o'clock Central Time. It is Central Time. I confirmed it is definitely Central Time. Right here on the Lockhart Perspective, we are going to have a very wonderful treat. She is Dr. Cynthia McKinney. She used to be the Congresswoman of the 4th District, I believe it was, right there in Atlanta. And so we've got some great questions to ask her. She's got some exceptional information for us. We're also going to ask her about some of the most recent things that she's written and get a lot of great information. I hope that you guys can come. Again, that's this Wednesday, and it is on the community tab. Thank you all so very much for coming, and thank you all for joining us today. You did not have to spend your lunch hour with us, but you did. In some cities right now, it should be you should just be coming off of breakfast, okay, going into lunch. You know, you're going from the sausage and egg biscuits right over to the chef's salad hour. That's the time. Let's see here. We got a few comments. Well, we appreciate you as well, Rachel Van Ziel, the bravest woman ever in DC. That's exactly right. And please hit the like button. Yes, if you would, please hit the like button. And if you would not mind, you know, sharing out the channel, we appreciate that. We are feverishly working just to get us to the place that we feel that we need to be, because the most important thing that we could ever do here is to share the unadulterated word. That's our goal, is to get everybody in line so that they can receive everything that the Father has for them. And so here you do find a great deal of information. You find a lot of good stuff. We've got a few other channels. As you can see, I was in the chat earlier from the Felicia Lockhart show. I think we're going to switch that one over a little bit and make it more entertainment, right? That's my background. And so that's what we can do there. But we also are available on several other platforms. There is Library, there is Odyssey. Those things are displayed in real time because they actually glean it from here and zoom it and put it right over there immediately. There's also a Patreon channel, and that is my name, just the Lockhart Perspective at Patreon. I think you can join there for about $2. If you're interested in that, go right ahead. If you are an individual who does not like to donate through the YouTube's, because I know a lot of people say, well, no, I don't want to do that because I know the person only gets, you know, maybe 60% or 40% of it, and they want to go through Cash App. If you feel you want to donate, you can do that too. If you don't, you don't. But listen, if you don't give here, that's fine. You're okay. Please find somebody in your community to bless. Here is why I'm saying that, because we do not know the amount of people right now that are truly and honestly hungry living on your block. Don't worry about giving nothing here. Take whatever you can. If it's just $2 or $3, find somebody and bless them. If you got to go buy a bag of canned goods, you know, $3, $4 canned goods, if that's all you have, and you're going to leave it to somebody, go do that. Do whatever you can do, but make sure that you sow somehow right now in this season. Because this season, when you sow to people and the needs that are everybody dealing with the pandemic or whatnot, you will find that you'll be a blessing to that person. You will be a bona fide blessing to that person. Get it. $3 worth of canned goods from the dollar store. You can take those and put it at a church. You can take those and you can put it at a school so some kids could take it home. You could find somebody in the neighborhood who needs it. You can give it to them. Let's do whatever we can do, right? Whatever we can do. Just every little bit helps. You never really know. So that's for somebody. I don't know who it was for, but it's for somebody. So you guys take care. I want to tell you all thank you. And remember one thing that we all say here on this channel, and that is that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Most High God. You guys take care and be blessed.
To receive instant notification each time I upload, please hit the subscribe button and the bell notification. Helping you along the way. Helping you to make it through to another day.